now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
It is that time. It is a Friday. John Gambling Show here at 77 WABC, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg is scheduled to be here any second now on his way, and they're on their way here. You know, George?
Yeah.
While we dance here a little bit, while the mayor gets himself together here, this Columbia thing in Ahmadinejad.
Yeah.
It's really quite something to see the emotions over this, and they vary from let the guy talk to throw the bum out. Even up at Columbia, I understand there is student outrage. Right. There is faculty outrage that this is going to be taking place. And then, like most situations, there's the other side of the coin. There are those that say, "Hey, he was invited. Let him speak. It's a great opportunity for us to listen to and engage in conversation with a world leader."
The sticking point is the fact that the university canceled a planned revisit by the head of the Minuteman Project,
Jim Gilchrist, right?
All right,
and others. I mean, they right. have they. I'm not sure it's a policy, but they have a habit of inviting people, and then pressure comes from some group, and they cancel them.
Right, and I guess the other problem was that the timing of this was terrible because 1 week they say Gilchrist can't come, and then the next week they say it's perfectly fine for the Iranian president to be there. If they had a standard policy that said, we will invite anyone who is compelling and fascinating and interesting to come, no matter what their political beliefs are, that would be fair. But when they attempt, when it appears to be that they're taking a liberal slant on their agenda and guests, then they start having a problem.
Yeah, they have a problem, too, with the fact that, and I am so conflicted on this whole thing, because as we discussed it at great length yesterday, you would hope that we would promote and continue to promote the opportunity of free speech in this country. Yet at the same time, this is a guy who obviously, in his own words, has condemned the United States, mm-hmm. Israel, eliminating both of those things. There is significant evidence that Iran is in support of and supplying the insurgents in Iraq, killing American soldiers. At what point do you draw the line here? And that's what's so controversial. It's going to be interesting to see where this thing ultimately works itself out, because it has the potential of really sort of disturbing a lot of what's going on here in New York City. We have the General Assembly. They are seated this week in the UN building on First Avenue. Mr. Mayor is here now. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
I am. Good morning. Nice weather for the weekend.
A little traffic out there?
Actually, I could blame the traffic, but the bottom line is I had three meetings this morning. One ran into the next, and the last one got a little bit late.
Fair enough.
Sorry, apologize.
George and I are talking about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and his appearance here in New York City next week, downtown and at Columbia.
He's not going downtown. I think hopefully he understands why not, but I just think it'd be totally inappropriate. But he's not going to go. And Columbia, look, it's a university. They have a right to invite who they want. I personally am not going to get involved in criticizing them because I think that's a slippery slope. Universities operate unto themselves. I'm not on the board of Columbia. They've got to deal with that. I'm not the president of Columbia. I'm not a student at Columbia. Personally, I wouldn't go to listen to him. I don't care about what he says. I mean, I think he's said enough that I find disgusting and despicable that I wouldn't give him the satisfaction of having of being in the audience. But that's what I want to do, you know.
Last year, Jim Gilchrist was booed off the stage up there. He has been invited and then uninvited again.
I saw that.
Uninvited again, as others have been. It's a situation that I think says a lot about our higher education, because this is not unique to Columbia.
Well, it's not unique to Columbia, nor is it unique to this point in history. If you go back, students always do things. I think it's incumbent on the management of universities to not dictate who the students should invite, but to make sure that the students don't discriminate and commit the very sins that they are trying to protest against. So it would be appropriate for Colombia to say, if you invite somebody that's pro-X, you should also invite somebody that's anti-X. That seems to me to be where the management of the university should come in. And if the students want to invite, want to address that issue or not, maybe that's what you delegate to them. After all, what you're trying to do in universities is give kids the ability to experiment and try things where there's no long-term consequences, but maybe they get some experience about what the real world they're going to have to face. It's all part of getting an education and growing up. I thought the way they treated this guy Gilchrist, whose views I don't happen to agree with, but the way they treated him when he was on the stage and he got pushed and shoved was a disgrace. And that Columbia should have had police or security guards there to prevent that from happening. They should have expected this to be an incendiary thing and taken preventive prophylactic steps, which they did not. Hopefully they learned and they won't have that happen again. But, you know.
Will there be extra security from the city at Columbia next week?
We will provide security every place that we think it is necessary. That's our job, and we will do that. And, you know, Ray Kelly has plans. I've been over with him of all different scenarios, and hopefully we will have anticipated any place in the city that needs security and have it in place.
Is the protection of the U.N. delegates, is that strictly New York City Police Department?
No, it's Secret, technically
Secret
it's
Service.
Secret Service.
Okay.
Secret Service provides the protection for heads of state when they're in this country. And so the bodyguards surrounding the president of Iran will be Secret Service. Keep in mind, we have to provide the motorcades, block off traffic.
Ancillary security.
Yeah, sure. And so you work together. And we have a great relationship with the Secret Service, and we don't always agree with them on everything. After all, we're the NYPD, we're in New York City, but you know.
They're just the Secret Service.
Yeah, well, you know, New York is a little bit different. We have our own foreign policy people, come on, I say. And that's what seriously, you know, we work well with them, and together we'll make sure that everybody stays safe. And, you know, look, this is a guy you wish.
He wouldn't become.
He will not.
If you had your druthers, you'd rather have not see him go.
Well, let me phrase it. I don't think he'll ever be a close personal friend. I've never met him. Probably never. I'm sure I never will. But if the United Nations, which I've always believed is something, while they do a lot of things I don't agree with, I'd always rather have a forum where people talk. And maybe some good comes out of it. And if it doesn't, there's no downside. And if they're going to, if you want them, you got to accept everybody that they invite and provide protection, and we will do that. And these, you know, politicians that yell and scream, I'm going to do this to them, I'm going to do that to them, you got to step back and say, wait a second, you know, you're the one that wants to build this country and build international relations, and that's the way you're going to treat
it. That's why I'm so conflicted about this.
You can't have it both ways. We live in a world, global world, we're dependent on each other, trade, terrorism fighting, science, medicine. We desperately need to have good relations with all the world. That doesn't mean you have to be friendly with everyone. I thought back in when there was a brouhaha, if you remember, would you meet with A, B, and C if you were elected president? I don't think that you, if you're president, have to meet with every single person. If we have a country we don't agree with, like Iran, no, I don't think the president should go and meet with them. But to say that your staff shouldn't have a dialogue with them at all times is just craziness. During the Cold War, we always had staff-level contacts. You have to if you want to prevent the next war and misunderstandings. So what people say for political reasons, because it's a good soundbite for the talk radio, talk television, is one thing. But I've always stepped back and say, you know, is that the person I want to going to long-term build relations for this country? You have to be an adult.
I need to take a break, Mr. Mayor. We'll get right back to you and an announcement, so stick around. It's a Friday. I'm John Gambling. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. We've got a full studio this morning.
We have a couple of guests. You want to know who they are?
I sure do.
I thought you might. Well, one is the city's labor commissioner, Jim Hanley. Has a little less hair than he did when he started to be labor commissioner 6 years ago, but putting up with me probably is not easy. And the other gentleman with us is Norman Seabrook, whose hair is starting to thin a little bit, too. He is the president of COBA, the Corrections Officers Benevolent Association, and that's the union that covers the correction officers that protect
those introductions an indication of the conversations that were going
well,
on?
I've known both of them for a long time, but they've come to an agreement, which I'm here to announce, and that is a new 27-month tentative agreement, because it has to be ratified by the members. And that will provide more than an 8%, actually 8.16% increase in wages and other benefits for corrections officers. And if approved, this agreement covers our approximately 8,300 people who take care of our jails. And, you know, they call it the toughest precinct in the, if you think about it, it's clever because everybody there is a criminal, or at least alleged to be a criminal. But it's a contract that runs from August 1st, 07 through October 31st, 09. And you may remember that Jim Hanley was here with me 2 months ago to announce a tentative deal that meant more money for our city's fire officers. Well, the new corrections officers contract is modeled on that fire officers contract, as well as recent contracts with the Uniform Firefighters Association, the Sergeants Benevolent Association, the Uniform Sanitation Men's Association, the Captain's Endowment Association, and the Lieutenant's Benevolent Association. And all these contracts, I don't know what's going to happen in this case, but in the past, they've all been approved by 90-odd percent of the members, so you know, which is virtually 100% in this world. And like the starting level members of our uniform services covered under all of those other contracts, this new corrections officer contract includes significant increases in starting salaries. Remember, that was something that came out of a labor negotiation or a arbitration ruling, which the city fought but lost, which took away a lot of money from the starting salaries of new people and gave it to those who'd been there a long time. Those that had been there a long time liked it, but it made recruiting awfully difficult. And this corrects that. So the Commissioner Marty Horn, who runs the jails, he is pretty happy with this, I think. And it will raise the starting salaries. A first-year correction officer hired over the last 21 months or over the next 11 months will make $37,577 in his or her first year. And with a lot of women, you'd be shocked at how many women are corrections officers. And starting next September, rookie correction officers will make $35,000, and that's a lot more than their current $26,000.
Welcome, gentlemen, to the program. Let me ask Jim, you've been working hard over the last 6 years. Are you 100%? Do you have all your contracts in line, or there's one outstanding, isn't there?
There's one outstanding with our police officers, but right. Virtually every employee in the city right now is working under a current contract. We're bargaining contracts into the future as well, going out as 2000.
Big credit to Jim. This has never been done. Typically, all city contracts were done retrospectively. They'd negotiate a contract that had already, for a period that's already passed. And now we have contracts going forward with virtually everyone except the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. And hopefully, you know, we keep talking to them and we've offered some things which I think they would be well advised to take. But all of the other police unions, lieutenants and sergeants and detectives have already signed up, and you know, here the correction officers coming along.
Norman, the length of this contract, 27 months, is that something that your membership thinks is a good idea from what you've heard?
From what I've heard, John, it's a fantastic idea because it gives the correction officers an opportunity to receive different added adjustments to their present contract, like longevity pay, higher salaries, and each time the salary goes up. I mean, after 20 years of service, a correction officer doing absolutely no overtime whatsoever is going to be making $75,000 a year. And $75,000 a year is a pretty good deal considering the climate that, you know, the city is in right now. You know, would we have loved to have gotten more? Sure, anybody would love to get more, but, you know, I appreciate the mayor's hard work, the Commissioner of Labor Relations' hard work, the Commissioner of the Department of Correction, Marty Horn. Everyone is sort of like pitched in and helped out to get the correction officers to where they're supposed to be, and which is a very good thing. And you know what? When you think about it, Jim, I personally want to say thank you for the work that we do. Contract negotiations are never easy. Never. Absolutely never easy. But you get, you know, what you negotiate. So we sat down, the mayor put a package on the table and said, listen, this is all that's available right now. Everybody has to eat from this package. So you know what? We took the best that we can do and carved it into something that is suitable for every single correction officer present and coming on.
And from the predictions, the mayor and I have talked here, from the predictions, who knows what the future is going to hold. There could be less on the plate to
eat from.
There
could be less. And the other thing is it's important to have contracts going forward, John, because you can't plan unless you know roughly what your expenses are going to be. We don't know what our revenue is going to be. That's the big variable. But at least if we have labor contracts, and remember, labor makes up 70-odd percent of the city's budget, at least we'll be able to make some projections. So you can say, well, you know, you might obligate yourself for things you can't afford. That's possible. On the other hand, if you want to have 300,000 people that work hard and are flexible and make this city what it is, they've got to be able to feed their families or they'll go elsewhere or won't be motivated. And the reason this city works, I mean, it's nice. I walk down the street and people say, great job, great mayor, great job. And I tell you, I love every minute of it. But the truth of the matter is it's the 300,000 people who are doing the work day in and day out. They're the ones that make this city better. And I've always believed, whether it's my company or in the city, the contract that you should have is pay people as well as you can, and they should work as hard as they can and be flexible.
All right, gentlemen, yeah, well, go ahead, Norm.
And John, I just wanted to say that what's really incredible about this contract is the correction officers didn't have to give anything back. Like some organizations would choose to relinquish vacation days or holidays or whatever the case may be. We sat down, we bargained for 12 hours with James Hanley and Pam, and we worked around
Pam
the clock.
Silverblatt's the deputy commissioner under Hanley, and also Ed Schuyler, my deputy mayor, and Mark Pager, director of budget, office of management and budget, are all part of this. None of these things are done by themselves.
And we sat down and we bargained for 12 hours to get this done, where correction officers had to give back absolutely nothing. And Ed Schuyler, very instrumental in helping out. I mean, he's the final straw before it gets to the mayor where the trigger has to be pulled. So I go to Jim. Jim goes to the mayor, his principal, and the trigger was pulled, and correction officers are happy. And publicly, Mayor, thank you so much for the work that you do. It's unfortunate we have term limits. You know, we could have, you know, used you around a little more.
No. Norman's still negotiating.
I don't know that Hanley can put up with me, Brandon.
Absolutely, I can.
Norman is still negotiating here. Norman, good to see you.
Thank
Jim,
you.
Thanks for coming by today. Mr. Mayor,
thank
sit
you.
Tight.
Mr.
We've
got to
take our half-hour break. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. It is a Friday edition of the John Gambling Show. Your questions coming up in just a little bit. Our telephone number for you to ask the mayor, 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-WABC. Health of fire department people and others that worked on the pile in 9-11. It's been in the news a lot. A lot of people are sick, and it seems that the latest information is that more are sick than maybe we thought.
I think the real answer is not only don't we know how many people are sick, but what's even more worrisome is we don't know how many people will exhibit symptoms of illnesses caused by their work on 9/11 5 years from now and 10 years from now. So, you know, it's the first time we've had to deal with a big thing with lots of people injured, but it isn't like they're all in an accident and you know who's injured and who isn't. Here, it's different. And what's more, you can be sick 10 years from now, and it's going to be one of science's problems is how do you decide whether or not it was caused by what you did 10 years ago or something else. For example, a lot of people, you take any group of people, a certain number of those, percentage of those people will come down with cancer. Now, if those people all worked,
how do you know who?
But statistically, it looks like there'd be a lot more, and so we have to find out what to do and treat them. The reason the fire department comes up in all of this is twofold. One, there were an awful lot of firefighters. Well, we lost 343 that died that day, firefighters, and a lot of them because it was their brothers and actually sons and fathers and literally who were lost there. They worked down on the at the site. So that's one of the reasons that they're in the papers. But also, we use the firefighters as ways to give us an answer to what I just posed, that issue of whether or not things were caused by what they did years earlier. The firefighters, when a firefighter has to take a physical when they join and then every single year. So we have good data on the health of firefighters going way back before the event. And so you can use that to set a baseline. For other groups, you assume that they had as good health or as bad health or whatever, but we don't have the data. We didn't give them physicals all along, construction workers or police for that matter. What the announcement was yesterday is Carolyn Maloney and Vito Fisella have worked in the rest of our congressional delegation and Senators Clinton and Schumer to try to get the federal government to give us money to open up places, centers of excellence, we call them, where we can treat people who work down there or lived in the neighborhood and have come down with illnesses that may or may not be connected.
The two new centers that were opened in Queens and Chinatown, are they part of that?
They are part. This is the city putting, the city's put another $50 million into this program. So the city's putting its own money. But, you know, this was an attack on America, and it's people who worked on the at the site afterwards now live in all 50 states. There's almost every single congressional district that has somebody that worked there. So it's become a national problem, and we think the money should come from the federal government.
Is there a definitive list of people that work down there?
No. There's not, and as a matter of fact, there was this big to-do where somebody allegedly worked down there, got sick, died, nobody paid.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it turned out that he hadn't worked down there. So, you know, like with every big thing, it's establishing facts that's hard. But this is a step in the right direction. Ed Schuyler, who we talked about earlier, has worked very hard on this in terms of making sure that we do what we should do, and that is help those who stepped forward to help this city and this country after the attack. And you want to make sure you do that because you got to make sure that down the road people are willing to help again. That's one of the big things of limiting the liability of the city and of these private contractors. If you don't, the next time there's a disaster, you don't want people to stop and say, oh, my goodness.
I'm not going to run down
I'm not going to run down there because I have a life. You want people to say, I care. I'm in this with my fellow human beings and just go in.
Some good news this week. The city was recognized by the Broad Prize, the Urban Education Prize.
Broad. Eli excellence. Broad. He spells it Broad, but Broad. He's a great guy. I've known the guy for many, many years, probably 30, 40 years. He is a wealthy guy who is giving his money back, and he and his wife, Edie, and one of the things they focus on is education. They have this prize that an outside committee awards every year. Three times we've been runner-up, but this time we won it, and it's the most improved school district, and given the size and the problems that we have, it's really quite a boost in the arm for us, and it says an awful lot about our teachers and principals, administrators, our chancellor and deputy mayor.
Now, this is money for kids, right? I mean, they actually get awards.
We will get out of this $500,000 scholarships
right.
for kids yeah. to go on. So, you know, this and it also says to teachers around the world, come to work in New York City school system. This is where it's happening. And in fact, we have a, you know, 10 times the number of people applying for jobs as we have jobs each year. Teachers want to come here. And you saw it, we had Randy Weingarten, the head of the teachers union, and the head of the principals union with us down there, and our chancellor and deputy mayor all were there. It was a great event. We had a number of senators that stopped by and Congress people that stopped by, all of whom said congratulations to New York, even if they represented areas where the runner-ups, who I think each of the four runner-up cities got $125,000 in scholarship aid. But it was a big deal.
The city controller says safety in schools is not necessarily the way the numbers have been reported.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you take two-year-old numbers and use them out of context, I suppose you could come to that conclusion. But the system that he was referring to and took the data from wasn't designed as a crime reporting system. And what the city does for crime, we rely on the police department to keep the crime numbers. And we've revamped our system during the last couple of years. But keep in mind, a lot of this is a definition. You have two kids in a schoolyard. One pushes the other. These are adolescents. Is that a crime? Do you call the police? Come on, exercise some common sense. You say to both of them, stop this crap, and we're not going to put up with this, and get on with it. And, you know, this isn't a schoolyard. Now, if it's a serious crime, if somebody physically attacks, and then you do call the cops. But there's got to be some discretion for principals and teachers, and it's so easy to second guess, particularly if you want to. If you have an agenda.
I would think in those situations the principal would not include a pushing incident as a crime.
Common sense says they should. Right. The trouble is they have reports like this, then they start getting gun shy. Now, two kids push each other. You really want them hauled down to the police station? I don't think so.
No, but if a kid's assaulted, you know, that's a whole
nobody argues thing. That. But, right. The, you know, it's at the margin here where you're talking. And the other thing about this report, it picked 10 schools and tries to use, which are 10 worst, and tries to use them as representative of the whole system. The truth of the matter is our principals and teachers and custodians and assistant principals, they deserve a safe place to work. And our students deserve a safe place to learn where other kids don't disrupt their ability to get an education. That's what we're trying to do, and the numbers are getting better and better each year. And we have 1,100,000 kids. Can I tell you that every day there isn't some problem? Of course there's a problem. I mean, yeah, 1,100,000 kids is more people than live in Detroit. Detroit would love to have a crime rate as low as our crime rate.
Point well made.
Thanks.
A couple of things before we take a break and then go to the telephones. The Rapid Alert Program, the city is planning on testing a system where the city, you have the capability, I know because we're part of the program, you have the capability in a disaster of breaking into broadcast, whether it be radio or television.
Yeah.
Would this be the same type of thing?
This idea is you'd send out an email.
How would you know?
Well, you say, I guess
it just goes automatically to everybody, who's in the system.
The one thing that had never been clear to me why this would work is that you get so many spam messages.
Yeah, who pay attention?
Nobody pays attention.
Some lunatic says there's a problem. You know.
Most people, there's so much spam, they don't even read it. I mean, so, you know, but look, it's a creative idea. We're trying to find ways to inform people. Keep in mind, the biggest problem is not how do you inform people. It is trying to find out what on earth is going on. If you go back to 1993, I'll never forget this, for 2 hours, one of the all-news radio stations, I think, was reporting about the subway crash under the World Trade Center, and in fact, it was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. It's establishing who's hurt, where, what caused it, that sort of thing. And even then, it takes days, weeks, months. We can still be arguing about it years later. Informing people is another thing. If you see something that you don't understand that you think might be dangerous, pick up the phone, 911, that's it. Turn it over to professionals. They'll figure out what to do. And people go back and say, oh, well, we got to inform our kids. 9/11, the schools, if you remember, did what they should have done. They kept the kids in school.
Lockdown, yeah.
The last thing you'd want them to do is to evacuate all the schools. It is about as dumb an idea as I've ever heard, because then these kids are on the streets. A lot of them, the parents work. You know, the young kids.
Then nobody knows where they are.
Absolutely. This way, the school system did very well.
Real fast, Statue of Liberty, opening the crown.
Up to the Parks Department, there's talk. If they built a tower, an escape tower next to it, which I think would be the dumbest idea, I would love to see it open, but it's up to the Parks Department, and they've got to ensure security. And everybody wants to rush and, you know, have a photo op saying, open it. Well, we live in a different world, and it wasn't built for that, and today you wouldn't build it this way. And what do they do? I don't know. I hope they can find a ways to do it, but it's up to them, and I'm not going to second-guess their security issues.
All right, fair enough. Questioning coming from you. It's next at 77. It's a Friday, and it's your turn to talk to Mayor Michael Bloomberg. You've got the questions, and you up first is Chris from Connecticut. Chris, good morning. Hello, Chris. Okay, we'll skip Chris, and we'll go to, I'm sorry, that was my mistake. This is Chris. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, John. My question is to the mayor. I am planning to come down Monday to protest the Iranian president, and I cannot pronounce his name, I'm sorry. At the UN, and is there a problem? I mean, I admire the mayor, and I don't want to stir up his city.
No, I think, Chris, you know, we have young men and women overseas fighting and dying for your right to protest, and that's what makes America America. We will make sure that you are safe. We will make sure that people who don't want to protest can go about their business because they have the same rights to not protest, that you have the right to protest. While you're here, I'd love to have you patronize some of our stores and restaurants and spend some of that Connecticut money in New York City. We need the revenue. But you're welcome to come. Just, you know, obey the laws and understand the police are in a situation where they're trying to protect everybody, and they will act professionally and deal with crowds. And if people start pushing, they'll make sure that it doesn't get out of control. I've always been a big supporter. And, you know, every once in a while you say to the cops, in retrospect, you could have done it differently. Yeah, should have, would have, and could have. But they do a good job. They will protect you. And they will protect other people.
How long is John going to be here? 2 days?
I have no idea. I didn't.
He didn't check with you.
He didn't call. Didn't ask me to go for breakfast or anything.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, I know.
All right, what a rude guy, Chris. I'm sorry, Scott in Brooklyn. You've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hi, Mayor. Nice to talk to you.
And you?
I'm a faculty member at one of the City University community colleges, and we're working under an expired contract, and we've been watching union after union get their contracts in short order, and ours has been dragging on and on and on, so I was wondering...
Scott, I don't know why that. I'll take a look. It's sort of a different thing. The City University's contract is negotiated differently. I don't think Jim Hanley does that one, but I will, if my staff reminds me, get you an answer for the next time, or I'll get John an answer, and he can tell you when you listen to him on Monday of why that's not the case. You know, the City University guys have done a great job. These schools are getting better and better. I met a young kid the other day who said we have this ASAP program in the junior colleges where you can have all of your courses in the same time period, either in the morning, the afternoon, or the evening. Before, the kids had to go different time periods.
So that you can work. You can
but
have
most
a job.
Of these, sure, most right. of these people either have families to take care of, or they are they have a job. And this will allow them to plan. And a dismal, I think it's like 20% of kids that enter graduate. And we think we can get it up to 50%, which would be a big deal. But, you know, I'm sympathetic to Scott. He probably has a family and wants to pay the bills.
I'm sure he does. Yeah. I got rid of number one by mistake.
Well,
I apologize,
you know, that's
for that. Exactly. What can I tell you?
I don't know what we can do. But, listen, it's been a great week. And
the Dubai ports, Dubai buying into NASDAQ. Schumer says, I'm a little nervous about this.
I don't know why. These are, you know, we live in a different world. These exchanges are owned by lots of different people. The markets are international. You know, we've gone from open outcry markets in New York and Chicago and other places to not totally, but an awful lot of electronic markets, and where the computer is.
It doesn't really much matter.
Yeah, I mean, and companies will list, you know, there's always people saying, oh, we're losing out to London. We have a constant battle in terms of making this a great place for companies to come and do business and get listed. London's done well because European companies have been active in terms of creating new companies and financing and that sort of thing. And the American market will pick up and we'll do fine here.
All right. I understand you're going to be out of town next week, so we'll catch up in a couple.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And Happy New Year to all of those who are Jewish.
And to you as well. Thanks. Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning here.